gobierno del país árabe. Por su parte, respecto a la presunta utilización de armas químicas en Siria, Rex Tillerson decía la pregunta hipotética respecto a cómo reaccionaría Rusia si es que se determinase que fue empleada por parte de Bashar al-Assad. Sergei Lavrov respondía: no hacen conclusiones precipitadas, haciendo mención también a los ataques, a los bombardeos aéreos sin prueba alguna realizadas por la administración de Donald Trump. Y es que insistía en ese sentido Rusia en la necesidad de esta investigación. Por otra parte, se planteaba la importancia de restablecer un canal fluido de cooperación, en concreto entre Rusia y Estados Unidos, tanto en los asuntos propios de estos países como en las relaciones internacionales. Y esta era la forma de ver estas relaciones por parte del secretario de Estado estadounidense.
Notamos intentos de molestar en la construcción de relaciones fructíferas. Creemos que es absurdo. Cuando hay cooperación entre Moscú y Washington, entonces no solo nuestros pueblos, sino todo el mundo gana.
Por su parte, las relaciones, sostenía Rex Tillerson, están en un bajo nivel a raíz de que existe poca confianza, calificaba el secretario de Estado norteamericano. Escuchamos sus palabras.
El estado actual de las relaciones entre Estados Unidos y Rusia está en un nivel bajo. El nivel de confianza entre nuestros dos países es muy bajo. Los dos estados líderes nucleares no pueden mantener este tipo de relaciones. Hemos considerado herramientas para mejorar nuestra comunicación y el intercambio de opiniones, inclusive en el asunto de Siria. Hemos compartido los puntos de vista hacia una posible resolución de esta situación.
Pese a este bajo nivel de confianza, como calificaba Rex Tillerson, también se abordaron otros asuntos de interés internacional, así por ejemplo la crisis en Ucrania, la desnuclearización en la península coreana, apuntando por supuesto a Pyongyang, en lo que tanto Rusia como Estados Unidos apuntaban de que es una prioridad. Son parte de los temas que han hablado durante toda esta jornada los cancilleres de Rusia, Sergei Lavrov, y de Estados Unidos, Rex Tillerson.
El chavismo enfrenta una nueva escalada contra el gobierno, mientras la oposición derechista insiste en que no va a dejar las calles hasta lograr la convocatoria de elecciones generales anticipadas. Erika Ortega nos informa sobre esto y nos da algunos detalles sobre el golpe de Estado derechista contra Hugo Chávez hace 15 años.
Se están conmemorando 15 años del golpe de Estado que sufrió el comandante Hugo Chávez en el año 2002. Fue justamente este el sitio en el cual se produjeron los acontecimientos ese día. Desde esta avenida, la avenida Baral, la que ustedes ven allá abajo, estuvo gente de la policía metropolitana, gobernada en aquel momento por factores de la oposición, y que arremetieron con armas largas contra una manifestación que se encontraba aquí, en el puente Llaguno, donde justamente hoy, 15 años después, continúan los revolucionarios defendiendo el Palacio de Miraflores. Recordemos que justamente aquellos edificios que se ven al final, estaba una cámara de un medio de difusión, me refiero a ese edificio azul que se ve allá al final. Allí está una cámara del canal Venevisión que estaba transmitiendo cómo supuestamente algunos partidarios de la Revolución Bolivariana estaban atacando a supuestos manifestantes indefensos en la avenida Baral. Lo que no decía Venevisión era lo que sí había registrado una cámara de otro medio privado, que en este caso es el canal Globovisión, un video que demostraba que justamente la policía metropolitana estaba arremetiendo con armas largas y guantes quirúrgicos al chavismo que se encontraba en esta avenida, la considerada el puente Llaguno. Hoy está el chavismo nuevamente en las calles a propósito de una nueva escalada dirigida por la oposición en contra del gobierno del presidente Nicolás Maduro. Resulta que son los mismos factores que llamaban a la disolución de los poderes públicos, a la disolución de la Asamblea Nacional, quienes en este momento están llamando a sus seguidores a la calle con fines sediciosos, según lo ha denunciado el gobierno del presidente Nicolás Maduro. Vamos a mostrarles a continuación algunos de los testimonios de las personas que en este momento se encuentran manifestándose una vez más, 15 años después, a favor de la Revolución Bolivariana.
El golpe sigue en pleno desarrollo, bajo una nueva modalidad, ha mutado, pero sigue siendo el mismo golpe. Los fascistas siguen siendo los mismos fascistas.
¿Quiénes reeditan la violencia? Las mismas personas que hace 15 años llamaron a la violencia. Hoy nuevamente están ocurriendo guarimbas, están haciendo llamados, están destruyendo las instituciones públicas y no podemos permitir.
Si nos vamos a los medios privados, se encadenaron en función de apoyo al golpe y a tanto a nivel nacional como a nivel internacional. gracias a los medios alternativos que en ese momento estaban en pleno auge, fue que el pueblo venezolano pudo saber la verdad, y fue en ese momento pues que nos vinimos a las calles a defender la revolución bolivariana.
En las últimas horas en Caracas se han podido constatar algunos linchamientos desde la avenida Francisco de Miranda, ubicada en el municipio Chacao, que controla justamente la oposición en el estado Miranda. También se han podido conocer que en el estado Carabobo ha habido enfrentamientos a balazos de parte de los opositores contra la fuerza pública que ha intentado liberar la autopista del este en Naguanagua, precisamente para acabar con la del tranca de vía forzada que ha venido generando algunos de estos sectores violentos. También les podemos comentar que según el ministro del Poder Popular para el Transporte Terrestre, Ricardo Molina, de las 2.340 rutas de Metrobús, en las últimas horas han sido atacadas y generados destrozos en 11 de ellas. La oposición insiste en que no va a salir de las calles hasta que el presidente Nicolás Maduro salga del Palacio de Miraflores, e insisten además en que según ellos lo que buscan es elecciones generales anticipadas. Asimismo, el ministro del Poder Popular para la Defensa, Vladimir Padrino López, preguntaba a la Organización de Estados Americanos a través de las redes sociales quién va a hacerse responsable de todos los destrozos y las pérdidas que se han venido generando en los últimos 7 días. Asimismo, hacía un llamado a la paz ciudadana y a la tranquilidad. Por lo pronto, la oposición ha dicho que el próximo 19 de abril será la supuesta mega marcha con la cual esperan cristalizar una gran manifestación que hasta el momento no se sabe hasta dónde se dirigirá. Lo que sí se sabe es que esta manifestación que se lleva a cabo hoy aquí en Puente Llaguno también se va a producir el próximo 13 de abril, cuando se Nicolás Maduro produjo realmente la retoma del hilo constitucional en Venezuela tras aquel golpe de Estado contra el líder, comandante Hugo Chávez.
Y rendimos al comandante Hugo Chávez y al pueblo venezolano que vivió momentos aciagos de dolor, tristeza, incertidumbre hace 15 años. A esta misma hora apareció un señor, la gente decía, los soldados decían, ¿quién es ese viejito? Les querían hacer rendir honores como presidente de la República, y los soldados de la banda marcial, de la banda de la casa militar, la banda de guerra, dijeron, ¿quién es este viejito? Aquí presidente, nuestro comandante Chávez, mi comandante Chávez, dijeron los soldados. Y luego los soldados tomaron los fusiles y dijeron, vamos a rescatar al comandante Chávez. Y estuvo a punto de ocurrir una tragedia y salir en vivo y directo el fusilamiento de toda la oligarquía mientras juramentaban a su viejito Pedro Carmona Estanga, presidente dictatorial, que en unas horas derogó la Constitución, acabó con todos los poderes públicos, todos, hasta los gobernadores, alcaldes, hasta los concejales del pueblo, los destituyó en un solo decreto, de locura, de odio, de fascismo, 15 años del golpe fascista, que terminó por develar, quitar las máscaras de los sectores que en esa época encabezaban la oposición, que son los mismos de ahora, son los mismos, quizás el viejito ya no esté. Se fue para Bogotá y está ya protegido en Bogotá, el golpista. Y luego todos lo negaron. Y luego le escribió un libro por allí, que no tiene pérdida el libro, confesando cómo se preparó el golpe de Estado contra el comandante Chávez desde el propio año 2001. Y todo lo que hicieron, violencia callejera. Y como lo vieron ustedes ayer en el documental del cineasta venezolano Ángel Palacio, que pasamos en Cadena Nacional, muy recomendable, claves de una masacre, Puente Llaguno, claves de un golpe de Estado, cómo prepararon la masacre de la avenida Baral con francotiradores para matar a su propia gente que venía en marcha ilegal y violenta sobre Caracas, sobre el centro de Caracas. El objetivo de ellos es asaltar el Palacio de Miraflores. Son los mismos, sus objetivos siguen siendo los mismos, y puedo decir también el mismo pueblo que los ha enfrentado y los ha derrotado. 12 de abril, mañana vamos a seguir conmemorando esta jornada. 13 de abril, mañana es el Día de la Milicia Nacional Bolivariana. Desde aquí le envío un saludo afectuoso de admiración a todos los milicianos, a todas las milicianas de nuestro país. La Milicia Nacional Bolivariana nació de la resurrección cívico-militar del 13 de abril del año 2002. Se calculan más de 6 millones de compatriotas que se lanzaron a las calles. 6 millones. Se lanzaron a las calles por iniciativa propia. ¿A qué? A buscar a Chávez, a rescatar a Chávez. Y en unión cívico-militar, sin disparar un solo tiro, se logró el objetivo, rescatar al comandante Chávez con vida, rescatar la Constitución y echar del poder al gobierno de Fedecámaras, la oligarquía, de la derecha, que se había impuesto de manera dictatorial. ¿Ustedes quieren buscar un dictador? Búsquenlo entre ellos, la oligarquía. Búsquenlo en la historia de Pedro Carmona Estanga. Y si no hubiera sucedido como sucedió, lo que era una obra de un bufón, los bufones del fascismo. Si no fuera tan trágica la hora que vivimos y vivió nuestra patria, lo que provocaría es risa y burlas.
Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del Tochtli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
1212 is the one and only Davey D. D to the A to the V E Y D. That's right, representing the Yay area. Big shout out to the Brown Berets. Big shout out to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. Listen to that. We out for now.
And coming up next, it's Bathrop's Piers Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I think we're just streaming, though I can never be sure how far those techies have gotten with fixing the transmitter, which has blown twice in the last couple weeks. But do stay tuned, and you'll hear Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, the April 13th show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And here we go again. Some preliminary remarks here on this show, which primarily concerns itself with civil rights that we'd like to see actually established for people who are poor, outside particularly. I'm Robert Norris, and there's no phone line into the station because we still don't have a studio, and we still have a $500 reward waiting for somebody who can give us information leading to a lease or a period of occupation for a year where we will pay a rently, that's a monthly rent, and we're looking for the place that you may have heard all too frequently on this station. It's a 10 by 10 space or larger, and it's got to have electricity, it's got to have internet, it's got to have, well,
bathroom access, really. We can sometimes manage without it, but that's hard. And give me a call at 423-4833. I'll repeat that number again in a moment. If you have any information about who might be interested in studio space, renting studio space, also, if you can call in on that number if you have some comments on the show, some new information to give, or if you want to get involved with Free Radio as an institution, insofar as we are an institution. I guess we are. We've been around for 20 years, more than 20 years now. 423-4833 is the number. 423-4833. So I'm going to be zipping through some interviews and then interrupting them, as is my fashion, with commentary and such. But first, a few updates. Sandy Brown, council member, I believe has a meeting tomorrow. That's on the that's on Friday the 14th. Today is, of course, Thursday the 13th, April 2017. And that's from 1 to 3, and it's at her offices in the city council complex, you know, past the sleeping homeless bodies, past the piles of folks' stuff because they have no place to store it, past folks who are trying to get out of the rain by staying under the eaves of the buildings. And I'm going to continue to focus on that throughout the show because it's really the core issue around homeless civil rights. Is it's not just the right to sleep, it's the right to live and not be struck down by theft, brutality, the elements, you name it. Anyway, you can check out Sandy Brown tomorrow, 1 to 3. You might want to try calling her first. That's the city council number, 420-5020. She also has a cell phone number, 246-0399. And I believe she gave that out. And you can reach her there if you can't reach her at city council. Both of those numbers might lead you to a machine, but just leave a message. So we had a small HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, meeting on Wednesday, as we usually do, from 11 to 1 or thereabouts at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Happens every week. Check it out. And the main concern was, well, kind of there was a combination of things. The Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it, is a subject that came up. Smart solutions, or what I call dumb suggestions, is another issue. That's the organization that supposedly does a lot of talking. Well, not supposedly. It does do a lot of talking about housing, but doesn't seem to find much, or at least address the concerns of the great majority of homeless folks who are outside, which has to do with being able to sleep safely and at least in groups where they can protect each other, watch each other's stuff, and so forth, which doesn't exist in Santa Cruz. Actually, it doesn't exist in most other cities, too. A lot of discussion, at least I was interested in bringing up the fact that the Freedom Sleepers at City Hall, the group that every week on Tuesday for the last 92 weeks, and number 93 will be coming up next Tuesday, have been there sleeping at night challenging the sleeping ban. That's right across from the main library and across from the Civic Auditorium. And often doing so under the eaves of the buildings where it's illegal to even be sitting with a protest sign after 10 o'clock at night. In the last 2 months, as I mentioned in previous broadcasts, more and more homeless people have been joining the folks at night. It hasn't been a flood, but it has been a growing number. And that's not just on Tuesday nights, that's every night of the week. On Tuesday nights, Food Not Bombs and India Joe Schultz supply food, and there's sort of more folks around. And there actually was a homeless memorial for Michael Mears last Tuesday, which I'm hoping to play some audio from, if not today, then on Sunday, at the longer show that starts at 9:30 and runs into the afternoon. Night, homeless folks are there, and because that's something that seems to be happening by default, and as a matter of determination by homeless people themselves without being directed or enticed or propagandized, they're just doing it based upon their own sense that it's a sensible thing to do. It's the seat of government. It's the people that are responsible for making it impossible for them to sleep safely anywhere in the city. And so they They're on the doorstep of the people who make the laws, the city council. And because this is where people are coming, there has been talk both at the Huff meeting and then subsequently at a meeting by a group that I guess it's sort of a coalition of groups. It's the Freedom Sleepers, it's Huff, it's Homeless Persons Legal Project by Steve Plaich, and other groups as well, which they've decided to get together and have a large protest on May 9th. That's going to be a Tuesday at 4 p.m. at the post office. I think it's a, let's see, yeah, it is, it's a Tuesday. And it's going to then march to City Hall. Folks are going to show up with blankets and sleeping bags and go into City Council and again raise the issue of, it's not on the council agenda, of course, of where are people going to sleep that night and every night after that. And that's a protest that's being planned, hopefully to draw a large variety of people, including social service providers, like people who are with the Association of Faith Communities that ran the winter shelter. I don't know if Brent Adams Spring Center folks may jump in. They might. Other churches will be invited. The activists are hoping it's going to be a big affair. Moms will be providing food, and who knows what else may be involved. Who knows? I fantasize booths on rent control and jugglers juggling, singers singing, guitarists drumming. Who knows? That's May 9th at 4 o'clock at the post office. It's the tentative time is being planned for, and then a march to City Hall or a stroll to City Hall, whatever. In June, the 100th anniversary of the first Freedom Sleepout is going to be coming up. I don't know quite. Might be June 9th. I'm not sure. We have to think about that and check my notes again. Other things that are happening are next Tuesday, right before Freedom Sleepout 93, in front of City Hall, there will be on April 18th a 6 p.m. meeting to firm up plans for this May 9th protest. April 22nd is Earth Day. I'm not sure what's going to be going on there, but I mention it just because it's often a big day in San Lorenzo Park, assuming people don't get rained out, of course. The next actual city council meeting, or shitty council meeting, if you like to think of them that way, or maybe you don't like to think of them that way, but unfortunately that's how the whole thing smells, perhaps because they try to lock the bathrooms throughout the night and often during the day to show their distaste for the homeless folks and put up signs about vandalism when actually the bathrooms aren't vandalized. They're quite usable, but you can't take too many chances with these scruffy folks outside. Now, the next council meeting, as I said, is the Tuesday after next on April 25th. And again, then there's May 9th, the protest at the post office, and that goes then to City Hall for an all-night sleepout for those who wish to, and a show at City Council for those who want to do that. There's even some talk of people sleeping inside City Council chambers. After all, it's warm, it's dry, it's vacant at night. Makes sense, although, of course, it would be illegal. So let's jump back to what I think was last Saturday, April 8th, for a look-see at City Hall again on one of the evenings when the, or maybe it's the morning, I will have to listen to the audio to find out. I'm not entirely clear here from my notes, but this is one of the days or nights when the Freedom Sleepers were not there. They only come on Tuesday afternoons and through Wednesday morning, and they're there with video cameras and audio and signs and protest literature and food. But on other days, homeless people just show up with their belongings, their sleeping bags, and themselves, and they rest there, they sleep there, and then they're gone generally during the day, although sometimes they're there during the day, too.
8th, 2017, around 10:15, doing the City Hall trek. We have a ranger from the parks, as distinguished from the downtown division. And under the eaves of City Hall.
And that distinction, I think I mentioned in the last show, I was told by a friendly ranger that I kind of asked him if he'd been, well, I wondered if he'd been giving any tickets lately to people, sort of a young guy with a friendly smile. And I asked him if he patrolled the city council areas, the library areas where people sleep at night and downtown areas. And he said, no, we're the park rangers. We patrol the parks. It's the downtown rangers, which have this downtown emblem on them, at least the words downtown rangers, as they walk up and down Pacific Avenue seeking out poverty crime where they can find it. That's not him. Although I wondered what he was doing at City Hall if he's supposed to be in the parks, but then what do I know?
What, 8 people or so parked next to the actual city council chambers? That's okay, you can chew and, if you want, talk at the same time. Talking with
a black.
And you haven't been here tonight or last night, but you haven't had any hassles with rangers recently or cops? Or is that accurate?
Oh, well, actually, the police have interfered with a traffic report, a minor traffic report, when I was hit by a car that ran a stop sign.
How long ago?
This was in January.
How did they interfere?
Well, they took one look at my bike and decided that I was incapable of stopping at a stop sign, and I ran the stop sign and caused the accident, when the actual fact was the driver of the car plainly ran the stop sign and hit me on my
Where
bike.
Was this? What intersection?
This was just down here in Cedar and Maple. But what it did is, by him writing up the police report saying that a couple of you be calling me a liar when I tell him that he ran a stop sign, he took one look at my bike, and by the shape of my bike, says, and like I said, I was incapable of stopping.
Did he test your brakes?
No, he didn't take anything to effect. Yes, he tested the brakes and thought, well, I've only got one gear, that it was impossible for me to make the bike roll from that gear, which I do all the time, and I stop all the time in that condition. And he didn't take into the fact that maybe the bike was damaged in the accident, which you could clearly see it was. The frame was bent on the top, and he could have seen all that, but he decided to write it up in the favor of the driver and put the blame on me, saying I ran the stop sign, saying that if there was a lawsuit, that this would probably be very difficult to take to a judge and explain the situation, when the police report was so poorly written and actually put me at fault of the accident.
Now, what's the name of the cop, do we know?
His name was Jesse Pedcock. And I can't see how I actually want to see if he could recall the actual claims on the police report when he actually did a slight investigation and just show him the facts. But I think I'll probably have to bring that to a judge. And the problem is with lawyers and things like that, with not having a phone,
hard time
to call you back. And they kind of almost ignore you, but I was injured in the accident. And
what kind of injuries did you suffer?
I have a neck, back, legs, shoulders. I was unconscious. And the fact about it was...
Were you taken to the hospital?
Yes, I was. I kind of feel like I was turned around in the whole report where I actually put my stuff in jail for 5 days or something like that and went back. And when you go back to the point where the driver said his excuse when I asked him why he ran a stop sign, he said he didn't see me. But, you know, that's not really an excuse for running a stop sign, because anytime you purposely run a stop sign, that means you really don't care about the human life that might be endangering anywhere around that intersection. And so the fact is, he probably should have his driver's license in his car and everything taken away and in jail. But he'll probably get away with it because of the fact that the police report was written up purposely.
Name of the driver?
I don't have the name of the driver right now. It's in the police report, which took me like almost 2 months to get, and they're supposed to do it in 10 days. And so, like I said, I kind of feel like I'm victimized in that way. And that was very recently. And that had nothing to do with the way the Rangers seem to abuse whatever's going on here and, you know, target the homeless people. You know what I mean? I'm sure they're instructed to do that because it's real obvious that's what's going on. And I kind of really like the city, but I don't like the people that work for the city. There seems to be some kind of not really even hidden agenda that's going on. That, like I said, if this person, the way the police report was rolled up, was to say that just to target me because I was homeless and make sure that I had no way to be covered for being victimized from this, and actually turn it around to protect the driver of the rich BMW.
Any witnesses?
And apparently there's no witnesses, and he did really poor police work for someone that wasn't there at the scene of the crime who could determine, you know, that I was the cause of the accident by the condition of my bike. And if he would have really looked at the bike, he could have said, well, maybe it was damaged in the accident even. No, none of these facts.
Gotcha.
So he basically slandered me and called me a liar in the way I reported the accident.
I don't know. So we've been talking with
Flash.
Thank you, Flash.
Okay, thank you for your moments.
Okay, nothing. Sleeping guitar guys. There's 80 or 90 people here. They accepted my garbage last night.
Oh, I talked to the guy here, and man, he's got a...
Some guy died on the levee.
No, really? How long did your reaction?
We were in there for our friend Jonas.
He basically said, and how long ago did this death happen, Steve?
Last night.
And any more details about?
They got him drunk.
We're concerned.
He died of alcohol poisoning, and I'm the one that gave him the
I don't tell me I killed my friend.
All right.
And last night here, has anybody driven out into the rain or hassled?
I got up and left before they showed up.
What kind of
my lid, and I don't feel like screaming at the cops. I'm just going to get up and leave now. So I got up and left right before they ran everybody out.
About what time do you think they did that?
What time was it?
What?
When the cops showed up and ran everyone out.
Oh, I don't lose that.
Want to have a plate of money?
No, you don't.
I got up and I got underneath this tiny little awning down there because it was going to rain, and I knew it, and the cops were going to show up and run us out. I don't feel like dealing with it because
I hear you.
So I'm just going to get up and leave now.
So how much of the night do you think you were able to stay here?
Was it?
How much of the night were you able to stay?
Oh, it was like 10 o'clock. It wasn't even 10 o'clock. But I knew they was going to show up at 10 o'clock. So I just got up and left before then.
And we've been talking with, if you wish to say,
Larry Brookshire.
Thank you, Larry.
And Stephen Wheelock.
I know, Stephen. Hey, Stephen, if I get more information. I like your beard.
No, I'm talking about jokes.
But I like yours.
It's gone away.
All right.
Alone last night.
I was sleeping in the stairwell.
Because parking garage and nobody bothered me. I just woke up just now.
I didn't get back
either.
And you were here? Or?
I was across the street, but I always hear what goes on here because it's loud over there.
No hassles.
There were people at City Hall or at the Civic Center and people at the Greek Church.
Any estimates of how many?
There was also somebody amongst them waiting for an altercation to come about so they could take pictures of it, and nothing happened.
Wow. And how did you know this?
Just somebody mentioned it to me. Yeah. I don't know the person or their name, but I do know that they were there in their midst waiting for to see what kind of reaction, if they would kick them out in the rain, you know.
Are the bathrooms open or closed right now?
The bathrooms are closed. We have to go, five city blocks or the library.
That's the usual, yeah. And how many people do you estimate were here in the whole vicinity last night?
Vicinity, I would say 100. Yeah, around 100.
Aside from the incident you just mentioned about the guy who's kind of throwing his weight around and occasionally punching out our friend here, has it been silent, violent, quiet, mellow? What do you think?
Well, it's been pretty mellow around here. It was really a lot of people hanging around out here, and a lot of them left because they are policing it pretty heavily. You know,
we'll come back tonight.
For a place to stay? Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Do you want to say who you are?
No, I'll remain anonymous.
Give me a pseudonym.
Sweeper.
I call you a sweeper, man. Thank you. See,
these interviews happened the day after or 2 days after Abby Samuels was falsely arrested by police because she dared to video them and stay in the forbidden area where people were being ticketed and driven into the rain. I don't know if they were being ticketed. They were being forced to leave under threat of tickets or arrest. I'm not quite sure. I wasn't there. I didn't hear a video of it. But and then Abby, as you know from the previous show, she's a Food Not Bombs and Freedom Sleeper worker, was held in jail until late the next day on Friday. This happened on Thursday night of last week. A week ago, I guess it is now. And she went before a judge. She insisted finally on being taken to a magistrate. They were trying to force her to let them take her mugshot, and she told them she'd already had her mugshot taken. And in the past, groups like a Take Back Santa Cruz had
had her picture posted, were trying to, you know, threaten and menace her job, and she wasn't about to have her picture taken again because she felt it was unjustified, and they already had her picture anyway. And so they delayed, stalled her for a day, and but then they eventually took her to a judge, and the judge looked at the papers. Usually the judge will give you a court date and or arraign you, or give you a court date for arraignment later. But in this case, the judge, Paul Maraganda, who I'm no fan of, and I've said that before, he just said, there's no evidence here at all. The case dismissed. And so that meant the police officers had no probable cause for arrest. At least that'd be my interpretation. I think if they... I suppose there's a situation where they might have probable cause, but the judge might feel there's insufficient evidence to proceed with the case. But it still sounds like a nice, fat lawsuit waiting to happen, and which, frankly, I would feel quite happy about, because the police department has no business running people out into the rain, and more, even more, or certainly as much, arresting people who are videoing it and trying to make it clear to the community what's happening.
Thank you. See, visibly, one, two, four people moving around, five people moving around up by the Civic, and then bags and bikes and loaded trailers, kind of, I'd say four or five more of those. Across the street at the library, not so many people. It's been kind of drizzling. The rain was heavy earlier this morning. And there are other people that I haven't spoken with at City Hall, but I ran out of the dozen or so garbage bags I was giving out.
So this was, actually I'm wondering if this wasn't earlier, but maybe not. I've been given garbage bags to pass on to homeless people not to clean up their trash, although I guess that could be something that could be used for those who want to do unpaid work for the city, but also mainly because they can protect homeless property and even homeless people by, if you cover yourself with a bag, you don't get as wet. That's the theory, as the rain hits.
The economy is crashing for so many of us. Still riding in the back of the bus. Crashing in the Empire State. refugees dying as they try to escape, parents crying behind police tape while waiting for the hurricane.
And that was Waiting for the Hurricane, David Rovix, from his album The Other Side. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org. For more info on Free Radio, well, you're probably at the website. Just poke around on the website at freakradio.org, and you'll learn more. During the last show, I had a long interview with writer, singer, and activist Carol Denny. And I wasn't able to finish the interview. I mean, I actually did, but I don't think it all got transcribed on the Huff website, which is where these shows are usually archived and stored. If you want to actually hear the whole interview, you can go back to the Huff website, and you'll find it under the Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides section and the subsection Lost Shows, which... where we kind of post segments or shows that don't quite make it into the usual archiving. If you don't find it there immediately, I'll hope to be posting it soon. Last Saturday, out in Capitola, in spite of the rain, there were a small group of folks who braved the rain to hold up signs stating Black Lives Matter. And I've been quite sympathetic with this movement because I've been demanding fairer treatment and some rather fundamental changes in the Santa Cruz Police Department and other so-called law enforcement agencies for a long time. Change from things like ending the use of shoot-to-kill, opening the records on the taser use and baton strikes. And then most recently, in the Sean Arlt shooting, showing us the DA's report and the witness statements, which Chief Vogel, the city council, the city manager refused to do. The surveillance situation in Santa Cruz, we have a sense of where we're being surveilled, if there's not some active crimes happening, but they're just kind of watching us. We need to know where these things are. We have a right to know that. We also need to determine if there's discriminatory behavior toward racial minorities and toward poor people. And there obviously is toward poor people. The laws are skewed that way. But there's also indications of racial prejudice and discrimination and selective enforcement and targeting. We found that downtown two or three years ago with Officer Bradley Barnett. And he was moved out of the downtown area. It could have been just a normal transfer, or it could have been in response to that. Who knows? But the one thing the police department locally will not do, at least does only sporadically, is if you ask for a breakdown of their citations and arrests by race, they won't give them to you, even though those are included on the citations. And I'm still trying to get together, continue with the project of determining just what's going on now around that issue, and that requires some volunteers. So if you decide you want to volunteer to help around the issue of police monitoring, or cop watch, if you will, give a call to me at 423-4833. That's Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or it's also my home phone. I'm Robert Norse. And at 423-4833, I'll put you to work, and we'll both go to work on that issue of looking through the records. But getting back to the Black Lives Matter protest, which happened in Capitola at the corner of 41st Capitola Road last Saturday morning, I think it was from 10 to 12, here's some interviews from that situation and some of my commentary too.
Lives Matter protest in Capitola on 41st. It's about 11:10, and skies are very cloudy. It's been raining, and we have about half a dozen folks here, all white, mostly female, a couple of guys, well, one guy, and a little guy. So I'm here with Free Radio. What are you doing here?
We are bringing visibility as allies to Black Lives Matter. We're bringing visibility to whoever drives by to just remind everyone that Black Lives Matter. Unfortunately, it needs calling out, because as we see from the waves of police brutality, there's people that have forgotten that. It should not need to be said, but it does absolutely need to be said.
Now, in this county, specifically here, have you seen or experienced or heard of much discrimination against blacks?
This county may not be as bad as some, or maybe I'm not black, so I don't actually see it myself, and people may not talk to me about it. I imagine there's as much racism here as anywhere else.
What about police behavior generally? Because you don't have to be black to be hassled by the police, particularly if you're poor or homeless. Have you either experienced any of this or gotten any credible reports?
I'm afraid I haven't. I don't know. Here, talk to her.
We've been talking with
Deb Berkson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's one of the problems of both this protest and the prior protest that I found, is that first, there was no personal experience that people had with any kind of discriminatory behavior by police, either toward blacks or other people at all, which indicates, unfortunately, if you're trying to persuade people that there's a problem, you need to have something, you know, solid. It'd be best if it's within your own experience, but if it's not, some kind of credible secondhand report, at least taking an interest in it, as some of us have been, and I have done for years. I've done that. And so you can actually speak in a very, in a somewhat knowledgeable way, acting not just from an ideology or from a theory, but from a fact. Now, of course, there's clearly, I don't dispute, and in fact, I'm a big partisan of ending police abuses locally and nationally, and I'm glad when people are out there. I'm glad when these folks are out there. But to me, it's a weakness when you don't have specifics. And also, there's no because you don't have those specifics, there's no specifics about the kinds of reforms that they might be looking for locally. And this is an even stronger weakness, an even even more revealing thing, and also a more crippling thing for this kind of a movement, because you need to not only deal with the issue locally, you need to have local solutions, or at least some demands as to what needs to be changed, what needs to be stopped, at least. And if you're not doing that, you're just sort of vaguely talking about end discrimination, it seems, well, I don't think it doesn't persuade others specifically. It doesn't inform others. It's a form of moral indignation, and I'm a fan of and a great exponent of moral indignation. I do a lot of indignitizing myself. But I think it could be dismissed as partisan or overly emotional or ignorant. And I don't like to see that happen with groups like this. The motto is get specific about this stuff. And that's why I was distributing a flyer, kind of outlined those things. It was a sort of an update of a previous flyer, but it was headed Black Lives Matter, Fight Local Police Abuses. And again, what I was calling for was the stuff I've been talking about before, open the books on the use of tasers and so forth, cut back a bloated police budget in the largest department in the state for a city of 60,000. A stat I have not looked at recently, but was, I think, reliably told to me by an activist a couple of years ago, demilitarize and refocus the SCBD from its flash mob, shock and awe, overkill tactic, by which I mean police officers suddenly showing up in numbers to deal with a smoking ticket, or massive numbers of police at City Hall to deal with a small number of homeless people there. By dealing with, I mean give them citations and telling them to leave, or threatening them with citations if they don't leave. I've asked the department refuse drug war money, military equipment, drone, face and license surveillance technology. These are all issues that have been raised somewhat in passing by the local ACLU, to their credit, but not much more has been done than that. Require all officers to live in the city, if not the local districts they police. End abuse citations, stayaways and arrests, support homeless people for status crimes. Focus on white-collar crime, abuses against workers and tenants, rape and real crimes. Swift prosecution and suspension, well, first suspension and then prosecution of criminal cops with clear histories of violence for specific instances of abuse and violence. And then I would name particular police officers and suggest to people where they should, what they should do, hold SCPD's, this was a couple of years ago, Bill Azua to account for persistent harassment of poor people in the downtown Santa Cruz for trivial violations such as smoking and sitting. Halt Santa Cruz Parks and Rec boss Mauro Garcia's survival toxic stay-away orders in city parks, such as the practice his rangers now have of whenever they give a minor infraction ticket to a homeless person who's trying to rest in a park, they ban that person from the park and every other park in which he's had an infraction ticket recently for a night or a week or a month, depending on how many tickets they've gotten for such thing. You can get a ticket for sleeping after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz. That's a crime under the camping ordinance's sleeping ban. So anyway, there's a whole bunch of specifics that I think need to be addressed. I mean, and they don't have to be my specifics, but they have to be some specifics. And that's the problem, that if there aren't any specifics, then people, they can either say rah, rah, rah and agree with you or you know, no, no, you're exaggerating. But there's nothing concrete to really turn to resolve any of these issues or to get any further along the road.
We're talking with
Phoebe Seeley.
Go ahead, Phoebe.
Three roundups of homeless communities just this week.
Oh,
just doing errands. I've just been seeing them.
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
Yeah, and on the railroad, too. I mean, in established places where it's like, this is where they need to take shelter. I mean, where else are they going to go?
Yeah.
Where was this exactly?
There was the actual place near the homeless shelter near Costco was one. Then I forget the other two. It was just out and about when we were running errands, and we were just like, whoa, there's two police cars rounding up homeless people.
You're talking about Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. In Santa Cruz.
Now, why choose Capitola rather than, let's say, Santa Cruz, which is larger population, although this is, you know, a very busy corner for sure.
Before she answers that question, I kind of doubt she saw people rounding up homeless people. I think she may have seen police stopping homeless people. And I would have questioned her more closely in order to get more details, because much as I like to hammer home police abuse when it happens, I want to be very careful not to falsely accuse police officers of behavior they didn't do. That is not helpful, and it's unfair. So I just found myself doubting the idea that roundups of homeless people are not so frequent in Santa Cruz, if they happen at all, as they are people being driven into unhealthy, uncomfortable, dangerous situations by police. And people do get arrested, and they get rounded up in that way. That happens, too, particularly those, if an activist is really trying to, as Abby Samuels was, she takes a stand, and she's advising homeless people to take a stand, too, and she's videoing what's happening. The police, they don't usually go after her, actually, and she's quite a frequent videographer on these issues. That's one of the things she tries to do, even on the in times when she's not at the Freedom Sleepers, although she has a regular job, and she's working hard with Food Not Bombs on the weekends and on Tuesday and at other events. I don't want to sound like I'm sugarcoating Abby too much. I have my disagreements with her, sometimes very strong and caustic disagreements. But I don't think the police, I wonder if the police in this instance were engaging in a roundup, and that's kind of a long way of going out about that. Let's hear some more, though, from the Black Lives Matter protest last Saturday.
Sure.
Yeah, we just chose this spot specifically for visibility because, I mean, it's a Saturday. Everyone's coming around here doing their errands, and we want to be as visible as we can be.
Now, I know the protest was slated to begin at 10, according to the Indy Bay posting.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been here, out here today?
Since 10.
Yeah.
I got here around 10:05.
And you're a hearty band of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people.
We're
counting.
Scared of the rain.
Yeah, I was here last time when this was happening.
It was a little bigger, but frankly, I don't think it matters. It's like, as long as these words go by and the cars go by and we get to have some visibility, it doesn't matter if we're 20 or if we're 5.
So, I hear the occasional honk, which sounds like it's in solidarity. Have you had any hoots of derision?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. We just saw a man, I think this is the most egregious one, of a man flipping us off with his, like, 7-year-old right next to him in the car.
Is he flipping you off, too, or?
The kid was just looking and smiling at us, but, yeah, there's definitely been a lot of All Lives Matter things and...
Blue Lives Matter.
We haven't heard Blue Lives, but All Lives.
And last time, too. Last time we had it, too. That's why we're here, if we need some visibility.
I see some African-American faces driving by.
Last time, too, which is great. That was a honkable one. So that's good. Our allyship is, at least for one person, it's showing.
And it's important to recognize that this is something where you're putting your body out there. So for a person of color, it's going to be a different experience.
Absolutely.
Than for someone that's white like myself. And, like, we've done this, and we've had the N-word thrown at us. And I really want to honor the choice of any person of color to expose themselves to that kind of thing. I mean, that's not their responsibility. Yeah. That's not something they have to do. It's something that I need to do as a white person that lives with privilege every single day. This is something I have to do.
And while I not only just applaud the political correctness of this kind of a statement, but also I think the sincere passion behind it, and its commonsensical quality, too, it does make me remember that local African-American or organizations concerned with supposed rights for African-Americans and poor people of a more institutional sort, like the ACLU, like the NAACP, like Santa Cruz Coalition, Community Coalition to Combat Racism, Santa Cruz County, there are 4 C's in that acronym somewhere. They aren't out at these protests, and they aren't actively engaged in, as far as I can see, going after specific abuses that happen to people in any visible way for the community. And so the kind of pressure that could be happening isn't happening. And I mention this simply so that people don't get misled into believing that organizations that have, you know, civil rights in their name are necessarily engaging in civil rights in terms of the game. Do they walk the walk, really? And the answer to me often is no, they don't, particularly around poor and homeless people, but also around racial minorities, as far as I can see. And I've always hoped I could be proven wrong, and I've talked about this with activists who get on the boards of directors of these things, like Steve Plaich. And interestingly enough, when you get on a board of directors, it tends to conservatize you almost instantly. You suddenly become less transparent. You become more defensive. You become less accessible. It's a good reason to avoid trying to work from within, although some do work from within, and I'm not going to totally dismiss that either.
And I guess...
I agree. That was well said.
I was speaking with, I forgot your name again.
Deb.
Sorry, Deb.
Sorry.
I was speaking with Deb here about specific instances of abuse against African Americans, or anybody for that matter, by the police. I'm concerned with that more broadly. I work for a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we did a lot of research downtown because we noticed police seem to be selectively targeting poor people and also African-American people, less Latino folks, maybe because there's a, I don't know if that's really true, Latino, some representation on the police force, or I don't know what the story is. But we found that there was a really a very significant increase in the number of citations given to black people on minor offenses, such as smoking on the sidewalk, or...
That's a nationwide problem. It's definitely happening nationwide. It's crazy. It's wrong.
Statistics are pretty conclusive on that.
Yep.
And what I'm interested in doing with HUF literature, which I'm giving out here, is to encourage folks to act locally. This is a local action. But also means keeping track of things that are happening locally. Like we have a We have a police chief, as you know, who suddenly discovered that there was an ICE agent for 8 years in his department. He knew that all along.
He failed to mention it.
It was an oversight, of course.
Until 11 o'clock at night.
The only reason it was mentioned, of course, was because a council member mentioned it.
And ICE, of course, for those who just tuned in or haven't been following this, is the Immigration Customs and Enforcement Division, the guys who break down the doors of and seize people who are without adequate papers, although it has to be said that this violent action on February 13th, which terrorized the neighborhood, the Beach Flats neighborhood, I think it was, and resulted in massive protest at City Council the next day, actually a disruption of City Council that stopped the council from proceeding until they agreed to hear what was going on, and then, of course, as far as I'm concerned, fundamentally ignored it by not including real legal sanctions in the law they later passed that declared Santa Cruz officially a sanctuary city as a matter of law, not just as a matter of resolution, but, again, had no provision for any kind of penalties if a police officer or some other city official did squeal or pass the word on or engage in get those immigrants out of here. Yeah, that's what ICE is, and we've still gotten no response from a Public Records Act request to Chief Vogel requesting, we got a response. The response was, all those records are protected, and the matter is under investigation. And the question I asked was, can you please forward all correspondence between Department of Homeland Security and Immigration Customs and Enforcement, ICE, to the Santa Cruz Police Department for the last 2 months, so we can see if Chief Vogel is telling the truth when he said he was completely caught by surprise that ICE is actually holding people for things other than criminal behavior, which they did, and using the Santa Cruz Police Department to assist them in this regard. And these officials insisted, the DHS ICE officials insisted in their response, and they might be lying too, I don't know, or maybe there might be lies on both sides or some other situation, but what they said was, oh no, the Santa Cruz Police Department knew what we were doing, but we did agree beforehand not to use Santa Cruz police cars or Santa Cruz police stations. So Vogel's claim that he was completely caught off guard is essentially been called horseshit by the Department of Homeland Security. And you don't need to decide based upon, I don't know, the character of their face or the shape of their head or the tone of their voice, who's telling the truth. You just need to look at the records as to what kind of communications were happening beforehand. Those communications have been closed. We can't see them. They're not letting us see them. I've asked Sandy Brown to make a formal request 3 weeks ago. She still declined to do it, although she said she would. I'm still waiting for her to come through and act on those emails that she said she would send out to other departments asking. I don't really expect her necessarily to get a response, but the very fact that she's asking puts the ball in their court in a real way. And I've already sent them emails asking and been essentially told, no, it's under investigation. It's not under investigation. I mean, what's to investigate? Come on. If some of it is under investigation, that doesn't mean all of it is. And these emails are supposed to be public records. So in essence, police department is just like police officers beating up or killing people unlawfully in other jurisdictions. They're violating the law by doing this. They're violating the Public Records Act, and they're not going to be held accountable unless somebody wants to sue them, drag them into court, and spend a lot of money and time doing it, or unless a bunch of people show up at the police station, put down their tents, put down their sleeping bags, or raise their voices and crowd into the police station and say, we're not leaving until we get an answer. And that's what happened at City Council on February 14th. But those folks never came back. That's the sad thing about protests in Santa Cruz. They get all heated for a moment, and then they sort of evaporate.
Well, four people or five people in the audience said, what about this damn ICE agent? We hear about this in the police department. And then one councilman said, we heard these outrageous rumors. And, you know, people just say these things out of the... You can't just say these things. And at which point, Councilmember Sandy Brown said, John Leopold, the supervisor, gave me that information.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's a fact. I think Chief Vogel has admitted it. I don't think it's even hidden.
Oh, he had to finally admit it. I mean, what was he going to do? He'd already... But the real issue is, what was he going to do about it?
Yeah.
And what was the community going to do about it? And the answer so far is nothing. You know, that's the problem for me.
Yeah.
I get pissed when that happens. And so
you're right.
No, I wouldn't say nothing, because we have been packing the city hall council and the council meetings, the supervisor meetings, too. So I think...
Well, they packed that one meeting, and they were very effective in stopping the council from rolling over once. And they passed a resolution that had no teeth, a law that has no sanctions. So, for example, the sanctuary law has no sanctions.
There's definitely, I mean, we have got a ways to go, but I'm hopeful in seeing how many people are starting to get engaged.
Before the nuclear war happens tomorrow, you mean?
Oh, God. Look.
And that remark happened because this was the day after Trump, under pressure from the Democrats to prove he's not a Russian agent, which is another ridiculous claim by the Democrats to justify the loss of their candidate in the election, who is a more of an institutional warmonger, whereas Trump, you know, who talked about doing something different with Russia, has essentially surrendered now to military-industrial types and the... And this foolish pressure from the Democrats, it's actually not just foolish, it's blindly and short-sightedly opportunistic to think that you're going to get, because you can get political capital by restoring McCarthyism against the president who's an asshole and a Führer anyway, we all know that. But you want to provoke a war with Russia in order to get political advantage, or to, because you suddenly have the intelligence agencies who are not revealing any specifics about their so-called evidence that the Syrians are responsible for the chemical crap that happened last week, the deaths of people, which by the way is relatively small compared to the number of deaths created by the U.S. and its bombings. Or, for that matter, by the Syrian government and its other bombings. It's all a bunch of hoopla that draws people's attention away from real issues, which continue under Democrats and Republicans unabated. The miserable situation for people living who can't even afford to pay their rent. Continuous war economy that eats up the resources like some huge hungry giant. A healthcare system that fattens the insurance industry and denies decent treatment to the middle class and to poor people as well, really, in spite of some expansion under Obama. Back to the Black Lives Matter, folks.
Please, let that not be.
Yeah.
I see no anti-war protesters out here either. I don't see them in Santa Cruz. I don't see them anywhere. I mean, that's why I cooked up this flyer.
All right!
Yay!
Food, not mom.
Have a great day.
But the sun is coming out, so who knows? Maybe it'll be bright tomorrow.
There's always hope.
Hello. Any other thoughts, Phoebe, about this?
No, I would just encourage white folks especially to really stand up to systemic racism and do whatever we can. I mean, this is really a small thing. And
it's a thing, though.
But at least it's something. And we all need to be figuring out what is the small, at least something that we can do in our daily lives to fight this oppression and fight racism.
Amen.
Both of you again. We've been talking with
Phoebe.
And, of course,
Deb.
And how can people get more information about your next planned action, Black Lives Matter, number 3 in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, we generally do it every 1.5 to 2 months. And I always post something on Santa Cruz Actions, which is on Facebook. That's probably the best way. I also try to post on the Indivisible site.
Anything coming up, Indivisible, or is... All right. I wasn't sure if that was a positive or a negative comment.
I think he said White Lives Matter. He might have. I wouldn't say that he was applauding us, but that's okay. Another one of those
Let's see if we're still renting real estate in his head as he goes down that street.
That was David Rovick's I Can't Breathe. Previous one was Waiting for the Hurricane a few minutes back. Again, all from the album The Other Side. I Can't Breathe, of course, is the famous three-word emblem to come out of the murder of Eric Garner by the New York police, for which no police officers, as far as I know, were punished or taken to court. And the individual who photographed it and made it go viral, or I guess the put it up there, he himself was harassed, arrested. I don't know if he was prosecuted or jailed, but he was held in jail for a while. And that was 2.25 years ago now, almost 2.5 years ago in New York City. And, of course, a lot has happened since then. The Guardian has a daily toll of police killings in the United States, something that I don't know if the feds are under Obama began to keep a record of that or require the police to keep a record. I know there was quite a show on the new Attorney General Jeff Sessions' decision to essentially back off on any federal, even the weak federal oversight that a few police departments have with consent decrees. Interesting discussion of that on Democracy Now! If you want to go back a couple of days, and Democracy Now! Of course is archived online, so you can find it. You are tuned, by the way, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, the stream anyway, at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and you're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I will be wearing my bathrobe on May 9th when I come wandering into City Council, hopefully with hundreds of other people, in a spring protest that some of the more cautious activists are finally coming out of the woodwork to put together, and the rest of us are hopefully being supportive, however skeptical we are of why isn't there nightly actions that in essence support the people who are already at City Hall instead of putting all our energies into one big Captain Billy's whiz-bang, boom-de-boom, and then everybody goes home. That, to me, is a sad and familiar picture, as I said before, with Santa Cruz protests. But it is coming up, it is happening, and of course, Freedom Sleep Out 93 will be coming up next week at City Hall on Tuesday, so don't miss that. And you might drop by City Hall just any night, and if you got spare blankets or sleeping bags, spare water, if you want to hang out and talk, see what's going on, if you want to establish phone connections with any people there, do that. And if you have any reports, give me a call at 423-4833, 423-4833. I'm sporadically trying to keep in touch with folks at City Hall. So let's go now to the traditional Monday round of interviews that I do in and around the Red Church and on Pacific Avenue. That's the Calvary Episcopal Church that has a meal at 6 o'clock every Monday, which they feed whoever comes. They're no longer limiting people with little tickets saying, you've got to have your ticket to get in. No, apparently that's no longer being done. And I didn't see much of the food Nazi at the door. That is to say, the guy who, his name is Steve, and probably an otherwise very nice guy, but he's acting like the little Gestapo or a stormtrooper at the door who will not only stop people who are going out with a plate of food, but who will bang chairs and sort of brusquely demand people leave as they try to finish their meals. At least that was what I've observed in the past. I spoke to Scott Galloway about that. He's one of the, you've heard me actually talking to him about it on free radio. I interviewed him, and, you know, to his credit, he was candid about it. I mean, his dodge was that he's not the person in charge. I told him, you have to be the person in charge to speak up as a watching human being who doesn't like what he sees. And he went into various rigmarole about, oh, well, Steve the bouncer has to get to a, he has a job at 7, I talked to Steve, he has a job at 7:30, and the Association of Faith Communities has a Monday night shelter there for 20 people, and I imagine that's true. But people got to accommodate each other, and you don't treat homeless people like shit because you have a bigger priority, which is to keep your schedule going, at least. You do. Apparently they do, and other organizations do too. But it doesn't go unnoticed by some of us. Not that we are, and not that I'm doing anything other than talking about it. And it has to be understood. I'm criticizing people who are, in fact, putting in time and energy, often volunteer time and energy, to deal with these issues.
So I'm down here at the a little bit late for the meal at the Red Church. I'm talking to two notables here, one client and one volunteer. What's your name, sir?
David Ridley.
And David, you spoke recently at the city council meeting, and I liked what you had to say. I didn't hear it because I wasn't in the utterly vacant seats of the audience, but you had a lot to say. I thought, what were you saying there, and have you got anything you want to add to it?
And actually, I did hear it. I heard his speech. It was a very eloquent speech. I may even try to play it for you. I think, although he will probably put it out here rather in some greater detail, because he was limited by 2 minutes, two minutes by Mayor Chase, even though he was the only speaker that the city council had specifically come back to open up oral communications for a 30-minute period, but they only allowed him 2 minutes, even though there were no other speakers. I think there were no other speakers. Maybe there was one or two. I think there was only him. But the audience, the chamber was bare, and I watched it on television. Let's hear more from David Ridley. And I think I'm an error there. There have been only two city council meetings. There will be only two city council meetings this month, the 4th and the 25th. And so there was no council meeting the day after David Ridley spoke to me at the Red Church, and there isn't going to be one coming up on the 18th. But you can always wait until the 25th. Or you can always go to City Council if you want to talk to Sandy Brown. I guess I'd call her up and go visit her tomorrow from 1 to 3, where she says she'll be having regular meetings at her office. Again, the phone number to reach the City Council is 420-5020.
Yesterday, or Tuesday, when I spoke, said she would read
my solutions. I'm going to drop them off the whole thing, and then I will come to a city council meeting and read parts of it. But
okay.
But it was just a, it was just about ending this horrible war on the homeless and how expensive it is to have such a war when they could take that money and use it a whole lot more wisely. And I think the next time you talk to me, I'll have more to say, and I'll have something typed up so that I can say things properly.
Okay. You know, I think you said things fine, but you know, your point is always important, and you know, the more you make it more specific, the more you realize that Mayor Chase isn't listening to you, however much he attends to you with a smile, that it's still good that you put out what you're saying, in my view.
Yes, well, I understand. I told her that we surrender, that they win.
I remember. They
win. And then I let her know that there's always going to be homeless, there's always going to be poor, and these are citizens.
We went off to dinner, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, no, we like I said, we
she called you up immediately after it and formed a committee to end the whole problem.
No.
Oh,
but she did. She,
why am I not surprised?
No. But I was impressed. She did talk to me a little bit. They're going to have a forum on homelessness. She talked to somebody else about the some of the people that are out here that are very weak, the disabled, the women, and she did. The mayor, in her defense, did sit down there and talk to some of the other council members while I was there about looking into the problem of the weak out here, the ones that are being really preyed upon.
Well, she's kind of weighed in that problem by supporting the sleeping ban when it came up a year ago for a vote. She was in favor of arresting people after 11 o'clock at night who have the temerity to sleep outside or in a vehicle. Can you imagine those homeless people doing that? I can't believe it.
I say that at one time, they from Santa Barbara, they were giving me tickets all the time. I looked over at them and I said, "You got me mad." And I began to start fighting back in court. So I think that if
how
the
successful
homeless,
were you?
Oh, I took cases all the way to the appellate court. Cost them a lot of money.
And what years was this?
I'm not sure what year it was, but it was
recently,
a decade ago, two decades
ago.
No, probably 5-6 years ago, maybe 7.
Okay.
You know, but
any help from any attorneys down there or not?
No, but
of course
the homeless,
not.
But I was trying to end the ban, and the homeless attorneys down there were fighting the ban, but fighting homeless tickets, but they didn't want to end the laws that are so wrong. They didn't want to end the laws. They were fighting in a way to they
ticket
were saying,
by ticket.
Yeah, ticket by ticket. Me, I was trying to end it, and I think that by fighting back, and I also talked about the most horrible thing that this state and this country has been doing, and that's taking misdemeanors and infractions. And they take infractions, misdemeanors. They charge homeless people and the poor, not just homeless people on the streets, but anybody that doesn't make that much money. They charge them with felonies, and then they stick them in the jail, and then they say, "Well, you could get out if you just plead guilty to this." And then they get felony probation, and they fill up their prisons with a whole bunch of what you would call
profitable activity. Now, come on, yeah. That's capitalism in action.
Yeah, and at the same time, you'll read in the paper how these rich people are committing real felonies, and their deal comes down, they get misdemeanors and a slap on the wrist.
Guilty until proven wealthy.
Yeah, that's right. It's a war on the homeless. It's a war on the poor. Not just homeless people, but all poor.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Just before Christmas I came in.
And how long were you in Santa Barbara?
Oh, I was in Santa Barbara years.
You were around when Nancy McCready was doing her thing?
Yeah, I know Nancy.
And when Will Hastings was doing his thing?
Oh, yeah, I was there, too. Yeah, I was right there. We were fighting things from different perspectives, but it was pretty awesome.
Hastings was an attorney, and McCready was a homeless activist, but, yeah. And a sort of a poverty pimpstress, too, in a way, although I liked her as a person.
Yeah. I'm still in touch. I'm still in touch with Nancy.
Enough said, Nancy. That's what I call her.
Wild Will. But you left Santa Barbara. Why did you go?
I like to travel. I like to move around, and that's just about all there is to it. I just really like getting around, going around, seeing lakes, rivers.
Have
I like
been
the outdoors.
Ticketed here in Santa Cruz?
No, they've actually left me alone.
They come upon you and said, "We won't give you a ticket because you're such a sweet guy with a great hat." What was it?
Oh no, I have been threatened, and I'll tell them I will fight it. Because I would love to get a ticket. If I get a ticket, instead of stopping at the appellate court, maybe I could get all the way up to the state supreme and the Supreme Court. And that would be something. Because I remember a lawyer sitting in listening to me fight my case. And he was a homeless lawyer. And he says, "Oh, I fight the case similar." But his fight was not to end the tickets, not to end the war.
Very technically specific defenses against a particular application of the law.
No, you see, in constitutional law, it says that sometimes a principality or municipality must make laws that might restrict one citizen's rights to protect the rights of another. But whenever a municipality or principality does that, they must do it in the very narrowest way. They cannot sit down there and make it completely against the law for one citizen over another citizen. And by making it completely against the law...
Strangely enough.
Yeah, they do. And by doing that, They have outlawed a whole section of citizens that they don't want to even call citizens. They call them trash.
We don't need your kind around here, if you know what I mean.
I hear that, too.
And we have been talking with...
David Ridley.
David, how can people get in touch with you if they want to hear more?
I'm juggling on Pacific Street. You'll see me out there.
You are the notorious juggler. I keep forgetting.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I started juggling
the custody, but then released without a ticket.
Well, that's because I was going to fight back. I sat down there. I was willing to go to jail. They were trying to get me to stop working, and I figured all people should be able to work. And they were trying to push me into leaving. They were threatening me with all of these things, and instead of me leaving, I stood up.
And people stood up with you, too.
Yeah, and people stood up
Alex
with
Skelton, Jock Jones, with video cameras, no less.
With video cameras. It was
and
pretty awesome.
And Mark Everlett, the sergeant, just drove away after that one. And he got spanked by, I think, Chris Crone and Tom Noddy and a few others.
Yeah, well, I ended up with a little piece of paper saying that it wasn't against the law for me to juggle and that it was a big mistake.
The law says, so Everless wasn't even reading the law properly, but why bother if you just have courts that'll just rubber stamp what you do anyway?
Well, what they were doing to me is they were looking at a homeless person, and what they wanted to do was intimidate me to stop me from working out there.
No, they wouldn't do that.
You know, homeless people should not be intimidated to stop working. I think finding work and doing different things and finding the talent, and you have a lot of talent.
We have plenty of jobs for you at Taco Bell, so get to work, all right? We don't need you on the streets frightening the horses and importuning the ladies.
I think that you should sit down there and find a way to bring out all of the talent that you have out here on the streets. You'd be surprised.
And again, we've been talking with
David Ridley.
Thanks, Dave. Here is the April 4th, 2017 City Council meeting, which gave David Ridley the grand total of 2 minutes to make a speech, even though there was half an hour of time for oral communication. And the council had specifically come back after adjourning for a recessing for 20 minutes at the end of their regular session to hear oral communications.
We're talking about homelessness again. The war against the homeless must end. Using the police to fill our jails and prisons is wrong and expensive. Charging the poor with felonies and using the jails as a way to make them take evil deals. Example, giving a felony to a mentally ill man for stealing a pepper from a store and making a deal so that he can get out of jail is wrong. Using the police to cowardly push the infirmed and the weak is the wrong approach. Police should be respected and looked up to, not feared. If you use the police to protect your citizens, and the homeless are citizens, and if they were not trying to destroy the lives of the poor citizens they should be serving, they could win the trust and respect of the poor. The real predators prey on the weak because the weak do not trust the police to help them. Our community would be a safer place if you would stop the insane war on the homeless. There's got to be a place for the weak, infirmed, and the mentally ill to sleep safely. There are solutions that will work. I'm going to try and list some real solutions for the citizens of this community can live together. I hope to make that list out and give them to you, the City Council, this week. On behalf of the citizens that are poor, we give up. You win. No matter what you do, there are going to be poor citizens. Denying them their rights as a citizen is not working. Now, I've got nine copies of this. I kind of made my spelling might not be right. My partner wasn't right there. The police at one time threatened to take my dogs out of the kennel, so I can't leave them. So they've been there all my life. They've been with me all my life. So
we'll take it.
And I will try to bring you that list, and I hope that maybe we can communicate. Thank you to all for all your good work. Thank you.
And I want to let you know, too, that we also have the report back from the Homelessness Coordinating Committee, and myself and Councilmember Narayan and then our former colleague Pamela Comstock served on that. We'll be bringing recommendations back in May. So stay tuned for that agenda item. We'd like to hear.
Stay tuned and stay awake. That's Cynthia Chase. Of course, you're not allowed to sleep at night. And stay dry if you can when the police are driving you out into the rain. Rochelle Narayan on a homeless committee is kind of a joke. She is the one who most recently proposed anti-homeless legislation in terms of attacking the safety of people in RVs, women with families who are trying to drive them completely out of the city and stopped only by, or perhaps just stalled by, the Coastal Commission, which essentially declared that they would not pass on the homeless, the RV, the no RVs at night law. I think it's from 12 to 4 or some such thing, or maybe 10 to 6. The details escape me at the moment. Unless the city could show that there was a real threat from people in RVs and that there were places for RV people to go, none of which Scott Collins, the assistant city manager, was able to show at all, in spite of some rhetoric he had around the issue. It was not backed up by any substantial facts when there was a Coastal Commission hearing last summer. The county followed suit by passing an anti-homeless ordinance in March of last year. Rochelle Narayan's ordinance originally passed way back in 2015 in the fall, and she was also instrumental in pushing it through the Public Works Commission, where she was sitting as well. She is a sort of the voice box of the right-wing neighbor people, who an activist fringe of whom want to drive homeless people out of the city, or at least out of their neighborhoods, and are using the toxic public safety fantasy or scare story or bugaboo to do that, even though they have no stats to back up what they're talking about. Sort of coming into City Council and shaking a bottle of needles, as Lynn Robinson was wont to do, and I think did so again sometime in the last year when she had even left the council. None of the folks shaking the bottles of needles have asked for Sharps containers to be placed at different places in the city so they could be more safely disposed. That doesn't enter into their perspective.
You often remember the day the soldiers came, when you became a number, not a child with a name. How often do you recall that specific day when they sold your family home and took you away? Banished to the desert to live in hot tar shacks, having no idea if you'd be ever coming back. How oft do you recall walking to the school being taught about the glories of democratic rule. As you sat beneath the watchtower, surrounded by a wall, with liberty and justice for all. Do you often remember the young men allowed to leave, to go fight and die in Europe, their families left to grieve, in shacks there in the desert, locked behind a gate, as you went to class each morning in these United States? As you sat beneath the watchtower, surrounded by a wall, with liberty and justice for all. Do you often remember reciting those strange words as you held your hand on heart? Did it all seem so absurd? One nation indivisible, one nation under God, condemned to live behind the wire by a presidential nod. As you sat beneath the watchtower, surrounded by a wall, with liberty and justice for all. Was set free, and you went back to the coast beside the Pacific Sea. Without a home to go to, no soil left to till, when you'd recite the pledge each morning, was it a bitter pill? As you sat beneath the watchtower, surrounded by a wall, with liberty and justice for all. As you sat beneath the watchtower, surrounded by a wall, with liberty and justice for all. With liberty and justice for all.
And that was another by David Rovick's Liberty and Justice for All, about the, of course, the Japanese, the American deportation, seizure of all the homes of the Isai and the Nisei during the Second World War, the folks of Japanese-American population, which was forcibly put into camps throughout the war and their property seized. Liberty and justice for all. Now back to more from the Calvary Episcopal Church scene, where I was interviewing David, and here's some more folks.
Today, dude.
Who are we talking to? Who are we talking
to? We're talking to the infamous
Rainbow Light.
Loudmouth
Leaf?
Loudmouth Leaf, you got it. I just flew in from Maui, and I haven't lived in Santa Cruz for over 15 years, but this is now my summer home.
Well, I hope you got it.
I'm going to raise hell in the camping van, and there'll be more soon.
And thank you. Anything you want to say before you go?
Fuck the pig.
Thank you, sir.
That man on...
And that Loudmouth Leith guy you just heard was active in one of the first sleepouts that I was involved in, mostly as a reporter, almost totally as a reporter, with occasional exceptions. The post office... sleeping van vigil, the post office protest, and it happened in, it began in 1989, right after the earthquake at City Hall, when homeless folks asked if they could whip out the homeless table, borrow it from me. I'd gotten a table together, and almost every weekday, or at least two or three days a week, on Pacific Avenue, in front of the old bookshop Santa Cruz, when it was still standing. Yes, that's near where Rosie McCann's, or Lulu Carpenter's, and literally thousands of signatures asking for some small changes in the sleeping ban with respect to vehicles. We asked that people be warned before they were ticketed, given a chance to move along when the police were issuing hundreds and hundreds of citations that year. Leith Austin and a guy called Jabberwocky J. Green decided to begin a day and night vigil at a table, and they did that initially in front of City Hall. Then they moved to the corner where Food Not Bombs is, at right outside the main post office. And there they were, there they stayed for, well, from November of 1989 to July of 1990, night after night, day after day. And police would come and take the table, take the literature, arrest people, and homeless people would come back the next night and do it again. And this so upset the liberals as well as the conservatives. There was a progressive majority on the city council, a heavy progressive majority, headed by then first mayor Mayor Marty Wormhout at that time. And none of the people who are on the city council now were on the council then. No, although actually I think Don Lane was the only person who was on the council. He's not on anymore, but he was on the council recently. And the liberals wanted to rid of the homeless protest there and get some sort of compromise that would, I think that there was a genuine desire on their part to do something. But what they succeeded in doing was eliminating the protest, getting the main people who were doing the protest, they were eventually jailed for a while, Jay Green and Paddy Wagon Pete Pascow. Actually, what happened was it wasn't an explicit deal, but then Deputy Chief Dunbow, that was his name at that time, actually did a kind of a behind-the-scenes deal with Homeless Community Resource Center, and I don't even think they had a Homeless Community Resource Center at the time. She ran a thing called Free Meal, which had been set up through the protests of activist Jane Immler. There was this deal that people could sleep on what's called the Back 40, which was the area right at the corner of Highway 9 and Highway 1, which is now where the Homeless Lack of Services Center is. And people did sleep there kind of quietly at night, although they still were ticketed and hassled at different points. Leith was a significant part of that. He also was an outspoken voice in city council, who would demand to be heard at different points. Who would? His famous cry was, "Die, yuppie scum." But he was a nonviolent guy. At least I'd never heard of his being involved in any physical altercation. So he was arrested for asking for a cigarette from then-Police Chief Jack Bassett. He was arrested and charged with panhandling. Of course, he was at the homeless table at the time, and it might have been a political arrest. To remind you, you are still listening to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you just tuned in at freakradio.org, I'm Robert Norris, and this is a twice-weekly show on Thursday afternoon, 6 to 8, I guess it's evening, and then on Sunday mornings from 9:30 to the early afternoon, 1 or 2 or 2:30 or whenever I run out of steam. If you want to reach me with any comments about the show, questions, volunteer energy for HUF, the organization I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or if you have any information about a 10x10 studio space, indoors or outdoors, we can build it, a little shack, we can put our stuff in it, and all we need is access to electricity, access to internet, and access to a bathroom, which doesn't have to be in the 10x10 space. Give me a call and you can be the proud holder of $500. That's the reward we're offering. 423-4833. 423-4833. Also call if you would like to support the sleepouts that are happening nightly at City Hall. I'll pass the word on to the folks there. Or you can just go down directly to City Hall any night and talk with and support homeless folks who are there trying to deal with the unconscionable conditions that are present in Santa Cruz under a liberal, or is it a moderate, or I'm not sure what it is, under the city council and city manager Martine Bernal.
What's your name, sir? I'm shouting out the memorial for Michael Mears, 5:30 tomorrow at the City Hall.
Of course, be on Tuesday, the 11th of August. And by the time you are hearing this on the air, it's Michael Mears has been dead for some time.
That's the 11th of April, of course. And we did have that protest and memorial, and I'm going to be playing more about that this weekend, on Sunday, the 16th, when I'll be coming back with another show.
But there are people remembering him, or did remember him, I hope, on Tuesday. So how did things go here today, Mike?
Mellow yellow, man. We're all like Donovan down.
This is a large crowd.
At the peak, I counted about 50-something, including the kitchen and the musicians. Of course, Harriet, she plays for two, so...
Like a lot of
people. Well, it looks like folks are shutting down here.
It's amazing. You know, we started a quarter till, which people don't realize, and they're starting to get it, that it's over at a quarter till. You know, like
quarter to seven.
Yeah. It's weird. It's sort of shifted into that quarter of. I don't know.
Well, thank you. Anything? Any other reports from the street?
You know, the Michael Mears was announced earlier. I had to say it again just to remind myself. The flyers are around. People are missing the brother. He was the weird of Santa Cruz, just down home homeboy.
Did you know Michael?
Yeah. We've been on first name basis, shared blankets and food, and you know, out here, brothers in arms, as some might say.
Will you be speaking tomorrow at his?
That's the shout out. Yes, Steve Pleisch opens it up for the general public to share 2 to 3 minutes of their best memories of Michael. I mean, they did that for the previous memorial, similar to the one tomorrow, is what I'm looking forward to.
There are plenty of dead people we're not hearing about.
That's true. I'm sure I've either missed memorials or they haven't had one for the others between the previous one I went to and tomorrow.
Scrunching you here is the sound of chairs being stacked up. Yeah. As the room is cleared for, I guess, Monday night, Association of Faith Communities 20-person shelter that's happening now that the winter shelter has closed.
Yes. It's still the other program's off, but the annual year-round or whatever is that?
Lucky 20.
Yeah. The chosen, not frozen.
Chosen, but not frozen. While the rest of the 1,000, 2,000 make do as best they can, or make do where they can.
You've said it better than most, as always, Bathrobes Pierre.
Thank you, sir.
This is Meriwether Mike checking out.
Thank you, Meriwether. Scott, I know the winter shelter program has ended. What impact has that had on the Association of Faith Communities program is here tonight, right? There's a shelter for 20 people. Is there a lot of people clamoring to get in?
Well, no. We did add some people to the shelter who were in the winter shelter who moved into Faith Community Shelter. But so far we've seen a shift. The winter shelter's ended. We'll probably have more people here at Coffee House on Monday nights because, of course, the winter shelter provided a meal, and that meal's now long gone. So in addition to shelter, it also was a meal involved. So
good point.
So we'll probably see more people here, I think. Faith Community Shelter, there'll be more people who know about it now because there was some education going on about closing down and the availability of beds in the Faith Community Shelter. So
yeah, that's an interesting point that Scott Galloway here is making. Scott is a volunteer at the what he calls the Monday Coffee House. It's also, I call it the meal, the Calvary Episcopal Red Church meal. And he's also with the Association of Faith Communities, and he's spoken on these issues before. I kind of took him over the grill a little earlier in this broadcast for being the person who was making excuses for the... Bouncer Steve, who wasn't there apparently last Monday when this was recorded on the 10th, I guess it was. Scott had to say about the winter shelter meals being shut down is quite significant because the homeless lack of services centers twice daily meals that they were doing up until the summer of 2015, of course, have still ended and are still have not resumed. And there are a few meals. So there's five meals at the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, and there's the Food Not Bombs afternoon meal on Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesday. And there may be a meal or two at a church. And if you're an elder person, you can get into a senior lunch, I believe, during weekdays at the Loudon Nelson Center. And there are probably a few others. There's actually a guide that Merity puts out, a free meal guide. If you look up Merity, that's her name, Merity online, you can find latest updates on free meals. But the notion that the city is overflowing with food, I don't think is true. It used to be truer, depending on your, you know, how heavily fortified your stomach was, but it certainly isn't anymore. And I guess you might say, well, the winter is over, but now the rains have hit. We have had the most massive rains this year, almost in history, in the written history of Santa Cruz. I think that 1982 is still slightly more, but with the rains coming up this weekend, we may pass them, according to reports in the Mercury News.
Acquired three or four people from winter shelter, moved into the faith community.
Out of the 110 that were dumped on the street.
Well, keep in mind that we only can have 19 people in the program.
Oh, I know, but I mean, still, 110 people were dumped on the street.
Well,
and you got three or four.
Unless they went somewhere else, unless they were taken somewhere else. But
do you have any information that happened?
The reason for the winter shelter is because we have 2,000 to 3,000 people that are homeless and about less than 40% that number beds. So you got
less
a lot
than,
of people.
Less than 10% the number of beds.
Well, if you count the whole county, Watsonville and everything else, there's actually some significant shelters. But
yeah, I don't agree with Scott's figures. And I notice Scott is quite facile and quite glib as he proceeds, although he's a very sincere fellow. And you know, he doesn't shy from addressing issues, sort of, although he seems to slip by some of them. And the issue that I was pointing out is 110 people were in the winter shelter, and they've all been dumped on the street. And some of them have come to City Hall to sleep, as Cherie Patterson and others who went to the Huff meeting told us. They appealed to Mayor Chase to do something so that people could get some time in a motel or in a campground for a while, and they heard absolutely nothing from her. So they're parked outside her offices now. Although it's not a protest, it's survival behavior. But I'm hoping that along with the mega whoopity-doo big one-day protest planned by Freedom Sleepers and Homeless Persons Legal Project and Huff, all the groups that we've gotten together will actually transform or at least encourage all of us to start doing some more regular working around the nightly survival sleepout that's happening at City Hall.
You still have a huge, big group of people out there that have no shelter. And, of course, this last week we had some weather. We still could have some weather now, and that's going to affect people very seriously.
Well, you're trying to clean up, so I'm going to let you get to it.
All right. Well, thank you.
So you can stop idling and talking
with
me.
Yeah, I'm idling watching our priest work right now. I'm getting off easy, so I got to go.
And we'll be talking with, we have been talking with Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Continuing with Red Church interviews on Sunday, there is first a little music, and then I'm going to close up with an article from the new Street Spirit newspaper, which you can find at the Sub Rosa Cafe, or you should be able to find it soon. You can't find it online. There's been no, I think Street Spirit is kind of maybe in its final days, or at least its website has fallen into disrepair, or it's repair, but it's only goes through October. But there's an interesting article by activist Carol Denny, who we heard at length in the last show, called Cost-Free Improvements on the Pathways Project, which I shall read momentarily.
Millions of people from the colonies were living in the faraway city, home of those who killed their country, who tried for over a century to bring Jesus back to Africa, from Mali to Algeria, and they fired into the protesters, dumped them in the rivers. There were lots of folks getting along, who
lots of folks feeling they've been wronged in the crowded Paris streets, in the patrol car's back seat, in the land of the catechism, in the land of secularism, where the learned taught the learning, where the cars were sometimes burning before the war came home. Rising real estate, fear of the caliphate, no question what it meant when Le Pen got 25%. Fighter jets in flight, lighting up the night, more enemies were made when the armies of the West invaded. There were lots of talking heads quoting something someone said. There were blasphemous cartoons pouring salt upon the wounds. More countries to attack, now Syria, now Iraq. Fighters returning who had seen the cities burning before the war came home. Before the war came home. In the cafe, having meetings, drinking ole. There were tourists in the tower. There were girls picking flowers. There were Muslims praying. There were others saying, this is a secular nation, no room for religious demonstration. There were people talking about blowback, occasional attacks. There were many people asking what kind of beer was brewing. There were ringing church bells and Al-Qaeda sleeper cells, passers-by without a clue what those masked men were about to do. Before the war came home. Before the war came home. Arrested. We had no doubt exactly what our fate would be. We had hours to get out, only hours to be tested for 5,000 people to cross the Baltic Sea. We had to go at night in the cover of the darkness. There's no way I could exaggerate the threat. We tried not to make a sound, wore nothing that would mark us, but no one knew how far across we'd get. And I thank God for the fishermen who gave us a ride and took us over to the other side. To find so many boats ready for the journey, find so many prepared to risk it all. Not everyone could read the stars, not every boat was worthy, not everyone prepared to heed the call. But I thank God for the fishermen who gave us a ride and took us over to the other side. Some risked everything for free, accepting nothing but a handshake. Some charged enough to live on for a year. But such details don't matter when so much is at stake, when all that matters is a boat that you might steer. We lived out the war in Sweden while so many others didn't, and most people now would easily agree. To say we deserved asylum would simply be redundant in the boat lift of 1943. I thank God for the fishermen who gave us a ride and took us over to the other side. I thank God for the fishermen who gave us a ride and took us over to the other side. And took us over to the other side. And took us over to the other side. And took us over to the other side.
And that was Two by David Rovics, Before the War Came Home, and Denmark, 1943. The first, of course, about the war coming home with the airplanes crashing into the Twin Towers, which, of course, has become the pretext for worldwide wars by the U.S. for the last 15 years. And then again, Denmark, 1943, which is where the Jews were ferried over by fishermen to escape the Nazis, as the Nazis decided to crack down on the Jews in Denmark in 1943. Before I attempt to give you at least a bite of Carol Denny, here's a bit from the last city council meeting, which you heard a little bit of David Ridley talking about homelessness and the harassment of the homeless by the police, how silly that is and how counterproductive. Here's the beginning of the council meeting, the longer council meeting, the open session of the council, where we have the consent agenda coming up. And that's the agenda which is usually passed as one big piece. And up to now, or actually up to the week before, when Sandy Brown made her announcement that if anyone wanted to talk about an item, specifically a specific item on the consent agenda, she would pull it off the agenda so it could be discussed. Before, you had to get a council member's permission, and that rarely happened. Well, let's put it this way. It happened in only a minority of the cases. And prior, some years ago, it was the city's right, as it is at the Board of Supervisors, to do that. But in order to stop people from talking on these items, they changed the rules about 10 years ago. Now Sandy is changing them back in a very clever strategy, which I suggested, actually. Thank you. Good for me. That she simply declare that she will, without changing any rules, she'll make sure that anybody wants to talk on an item, all they have to do is raise their hand and she'll recognize them and they can go talk. And here she is announcing that for a second time after you hear the introduction by Mayor Chase.
So now we are on to the consent agenda, and these are items 3 through 8, and they will all be acted upon in one motion unless a council member pulls an item for further discussion. Are there any council members who wish to pull an item? Okay. All right. So then, let's see.
But I will add my question that I have agreed to ask. If there are any members of the public who would like to pull an item, I am willing to do that.
So now we'll go to the members of the public to see if there's anyone who'd like to speak on any item on consent agenda, with no exceptions to that. This is the first time this has happened where no one has pulled an item. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on the consent agenda? Items 3 through 8. All right, so then I'm looking for a motion on the consent agenda in its entirety.
Move to approve the consent agenda in its entirety.
Second. That's a motion by Narayan, second by Brown. All those in favor? Oh, sorry.
I just want to comment. I didn't want to pull it, but I feel like number four.
I think that's terribly relevant what David Terrazas has to say, at least for my show. But there you have it, the open option. Will Sandy Brown continue to do this? Well, she's stated that she will. However, the way she was phrasing it makes it look like she had agreed on maybe one or two occasions to ask the question. I'm hoping that she's agreeing to do that on a regular basis. That was my understanding. But then again, I also understood that she was going to act to send out very numerous requests to different staff members in terms of discussed on the show earlier with the missing information and the Arlt killing by the police. So the sleeping ban enforcement, five or six other items, which essentially involve simply putting in an email to the relevant staff person and requesting it. And so far she hasn't done any of that. So I'm still waiting. Sandy, let's get to it, please. So now I'm going to have to break my promise, I don't know if it was a promise, but my suggestion that I would be reading an article by Carol Denny. I will probably try to do that on Sunday. And hopefully you'll be able to pick up a copy of this month's Street Spirit, which you can find, or you should be able to find soon, at the Sub Rosa. If you can't find a copy, please call me at 423-4833. I'll try to get a copy into the library as well this weekend. And if you see me on the streets, if you know who I am, Big chunky guy with a beard and white hair. Also the character with the mini bumper stickered car. So there aren't too many cars that are completely covered with bumper stickers, and I've got one of them. Talk to me there. And I think I'm going to end the show with a little more from David Rovics and a suggestion that, hey, come on back on Sunday and you'll be able to hear more of this. And call me at 423-4833 if you have anything you want to add to the show, if you have any comments on the show, if you have any suggestions for places that Free Radio might find a studio, so you might possibly win $500. If you're organizing any kind of anti-war activity, I am very interested. The city is disastrously quiet on the issue of the latest hair-trigger war that is really on the edge of happening between Russia and the U.S. It's a very dangerous situation, and nobody is out on the streets doing much about it. I think I've heard a couple of indications that there's a protest plan somewhere down the road, but there's not the gatherings at the town clock, people walking up and down with signs, the anger and concern that should be there, partially because the Democrats have become the war party along with the Republicans. Don't let that happen here in Santa Cruz. I hope some of us know better than that. Democrats have never been of much use generally at all, but here they're showing that they're even worse. But then again, some of us knew that already. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadside. Let's go out on David Rovics, and I'll be talking at you again soon. I hope.
This middle-aged man had accomplished little that he set out to do. He spewed anger at all of his neighbors, and he hated religion so much. Maybe that's why he moved to the Bible Belt, because hatred is such a good crutch. He spewed anger about all religions, with his back against the wall. Why stop at hating just one of them when you could just hate them all? Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man. He was 46 years old. He didn't live among his peers. Neighbors mostly younger by about 24 years. Neighbors from all over, some in religious dress. But what in hell the man was thinking, we can only try to guess. Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man. His neighbors had a meeting last year to talk over what they might do about this man they feared. He carried a loaded pistol, no telling what might inspire him to pull it out one day and... Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man. Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man. He was listening to voices talking in his head. If you grew up in America, you know exactly what they said. And with every job we lose, however bad things get, there's a black man in the White House on the TV set. And we can blame it all on him and his entire race.
because they no longer know their place. You can hear the voices by the early light of dawn. You can see the flag waving on the state house lawn. He was listening to voices. You could say that he was crazy for thinking certain people are just born to be lazy. He could see it on the cop shows. They don't know right from wrong. The race war is coming.